sun gone down, darkness be o'er me, my rest a stone. Yet in my dream I be nearer, my God, to thee, nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee.
Welcome to Strange Familiars Podcast. We cover a range of topics, from the paranormal to cryptids, to the occult, to mythology and folklore. Some of our shows will be presented over multiple episodes, while others will be one-shot features. I'm Timothy Renner.
And I'm Anthony Hoskin. Please make sure to like and subscribe to us wherever you are listening, YouTube, iTunes, or via any other service. If you have any idea for any strange stories you would like us to cover, or if you have experienced something strange yourself, please contact us by email, strangefamiliarspodcast@gmail.com, or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars.
Welcome to episode 2. We're continuing with our story about Toad Road and the Seven Gates of Hell, a legend from York County, Pennsylvania. If you didn't hear episode 1, go back and listen now. We'll be here when you get back. So for those that did listen to episode 1, or those who want to start with episode 2, I guess we need to just do a quick recap. So we started off up at Toad Road and talked about the legends up there.
A legend of mad doctors and a burning asylum.
Yeah, the mad doctor who wasn't mad and the burning asylum that was never there. That was never there. As we went over in episode 1, these are just stories. We have theories how they became associated with Toad Road, but the fact is that there never was an insane asylum, and there never was a mad doctor who kept patients in his house or his mansion that burnt down.
We did connect two doctors to the story. You can go back and hear the details of that, but definitely not mad doctors. And there was no asylum in York at all.
No. So this popular legend about Toad Road and the Seven Gates of Hell, it's more recent. And what I originally heard in regards to the Seven Gates of Hell when I moved to York County in the mid-1990s was I heard they were first located at Hex Hollow, which is Ray Myers Hollow, in the southern part of the county. And I also heard they were located in Prospect Hill Cemetery. In episode 1, we also talked about Hex Hollow.
We covered Nelson Ray Meyer and his unfortunate murder and burning of his body and the strange things that happened following that in Hex Hollow.
Yeah, both preceding and following it. We covered some ghost stories that happened there before Ray Meyer, at least before Ray Meyer's murder. And we talked a lot about the Codorus Creek, which is the one thing that connects these locations in York County. It flows northward from Hex Hollow and into York City. And that's where we're going for this episode, to Prospect Hill Cemetery. It's the other place I heard where the Seven Gates of Hell were supposed to be located.
Yeah, the Prospect Hill Cemetery is a beautiful cemetery. It's 170 acres of land. It used to be an orchard. People were buried there as early as 1835, and it became an official cemetery in 1849.
So do you think they were burying people in the orchard, since it wasn't an official cemetery yet?
Under the apple tree.
That would be a beautiful place.
It's still a beautiful place, but just not in that
Yeah, absolutely. It was sort of part of the Victorian cemetery phenomenon, craze. How would you say it? Trend. During this time, they decided to kind of make cemeteries beautiful. A lot of statuary. They made them park-like. People would actually go.
You can stroll through the cemetery.
People would go on the weekends. They would go have picnics in the cemetery. It wasn't an unusual thing because they made them just very, you know, nice-looking places. And Prospect Hill is absolutely a fantastic, well-kept, beautiful cemetery.
Yeah, and a great example of the Victorian era cemetery.
Absolutely. It's also located just a couple blocks from Codorus Creek. Besides that, and I don't know how much of the strangeness we can throw into the creek or pull out of it.
Yeah.
But again, that's just the thing that connects these three locations. So we have to ponder.
Yeah. It causes the imagination to stir.
Exactly. Yeah. So, as we're talking about the seven gates possibly located there, the way the seven gates were supposed to work were by a series of circuitous routes. In other words, you would make a loop or a circle, or you would do a pattern either through Hex Hollow or the cemetery. It was supposed to work the same way in both locations. They weren't physical gates. Each loop was to open a sort of a symbolic gate.
A passage.
And the old part of the cemetery, the part that would have been built or would have been there during Victorian times, is laid out in circles. There's a practical reason for this. It's because they had horse-drawn hearses and carriages that would have been there for the funerals. And the circular tracks make it a lot easier to navigate for the horses.
It's very strange going there now and seeing the two distinct patterns set up, the circular routes and then the more linear, modern paths that they have. The older circular routes are kind of seem a bit more beautifully laid out than the kind of plain linear paths.
Yeah, it becomes very boxy.
Yeah,
in
very
modern
sterile
times.
In a weird way.
Yeah, they really had to, I guess, plan when they laid out the circular plots for people to be buried in, and of course. People were being buried on top of each other.
Yeah.
If you look at some of the plots.
Yeah, the way the earth shifted, they kind of fell into each other too over time.
Yeah. But even amongst family plots, not everyone has a tombstone. If you're looking for someone in particular, my wife was doing some research on some York photographers there, and we actually were given their family plot. Not everybody's marked there, so some of the photographers she was looking for weren't even, they didn't have headstones. They're just in there with the other people, either buried on top or alongside and unmarked and so forth. So it's there's a lot of bodies in there, not all of them with tombstones.
Yeah. And then to add to our little story here, the main building is called the Gate Lodge. It's kind of adds to the theory of the seven gates.
Yeah, that was one of the things that stood out. If you're looking for sort of gate synchronicities, here this is beautiful.
There.
It's a beautiful building too. It really complements the the cemetery well, but it is called the Gate Lodge. And at the time I was writing the book, I also looked at Google Satellite View just out of curiosity. I wanted to count the number of ways in and out of the cemetery. So this includes maintenance, roads, and walking paths. But the way I counted, I counted 7 ways in and out of Prospect Hill Cemetery, which, again, if you want to consider those gates, I don't believe every one of them has a gate on it. But I just found that odd, another synchronicity. Here we have 7 sort of gates in and out of Prospect Hill Cemetery. Who knows how many gates there were during Victorian times, and I'm sure it's changed a lot over the years. We know for a fact that, for instance, there was a fence there in the early 1900s that's now just a low stone wall.
Yeah, that comes into play with a story we have coming up. It's a ghost story. The Victorian era cemeteries usually have plenty of ghost stories, but for some reason there doesn't seem to be many associated with Prospect Hill. But we do have one.
We do have one, and it's one of my favorite ghost stories of all time.
If you have any other stories, if you're listening and you have any other stories about Prospect Hill Cemetery, we'd love to hear them. So you can email those to us if you have them.
Yeah, get in touch, email or Facebook. We'd love to hear them because I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there's more stories for Prospect Hill, but we haven't found them. I haven't read any in the local ghost story books, to my knowledge. I may be forgetting some. But
there are so many people interred there. There has to be more stories.
Exactly. But as far as the story we did find, it's like I said, it's one of my favorites. We've started to call it the Singing Corpse.
Let the way appear, steps unto heaven, and all thou sendest me in mercy given. Angels to beckon me nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee.
Ghost in Black haunts Pennsylvania Cemetery, York, Pennsylvania, April 5th. Prospect Hill Cemetery, with a great majority of York's departed rest, though opened more than half a century ago, has, strange to say, never had a ghost story associated with it until now, when one of the most weird tales that has ever afforded diversion for the lovers of the uncanny is occupying the public mind. Just before sunrise one morning recently, an employee of the electric light company was engaged in placing fresh carbons in the electric lamps, which at night light the York and Baltimore Pike between this city and the borough of North York, when the melodious strains of a voice of angelic sweetness broke upon the silence of the hour. Nearer, my God, to thee was being rendered in a style that would have caused a choir master to go into ecstasies, but what the lone lamp man saw caused his blood to run cold. About 20 rods from the fence, standing beside a dark mound, masked by a marble headstone, was the figure of a man clad in full evening dress. One hand rested upon the headstone, the other hanging gracefully by his side held what was apparently a crushed hat. The moonlight revealed a face of deathly pallor, and the bloodless lips of the weird singer were plainly seen to move as the hymn progressed. So frightened was the lamp man that he abandoned his work and sprinted for York, never lessening his gait until he arrived within the city limits, breathless and shaking from fright. Since the lamp man's adventure, the recounting of which amazed his friends and set the tongues of the superstitious to wagging, the mysterious singer has been seen and heard at varied hours of the night by streetcar motormen and conductors and pedestrians in their transit between North York and York. Harry Metzel and George Adams, two young men residing in the southeastern section of the city, hearing the tales told of the strange singer, had their curiosity aroused to such an extent that they resolved to spend a night in the cemetery as watchers and interview his ghostship if the singer proved to be of the spirit world. Last Friday night was selected as the time, and the thrilling experience is best told in Metzel's own words.
I've never placed any stock in ghosts, and my friend Adams is not overly credulous. When I asked him if he would be afraid to spend a night in the cemetery with me to watch for the singer, he said he thought no harm could come of us in a place that is peopled with the dead, and readily agreed to accompany me. It was 9:30 when we entered the cemetery by scaling the fence. The spot where the singer appears had been pointed out to me on a previous morning. Under a pine tree about 50 rods from the spot, we found a rustic seat, which we occupied. An hour passed without incident, and we had become so engrossed in our conversation that we had quite forgotten the object of our visit to this lonely place. Suddenly Adams, who was talking, ceased and clutched me by the arm. "Look," he exclaimed, and following the direction indicated by his pointed finger, I saw, standing at a graveside with his back towards us, a well-built man, somewhat above medium height and attired in a dark suit. Neither Adams or myself had observed how the man, or apparition, for now I am not certain which of these it might have been, reached the graveside. My heart was beating ragtime, and I could hear Adams' heart beating against his ribs, when a sweet, clear voice, the like of which I had never heard before, echoed through the trees. It was the singer, sure enough, and he was singing "Nearer, My God, to Thee." Enraptured, we both listened. We could not move. Our limbs seemed to be paralyzed. When the singer concluded the last verse of the hymn, I regained enough of my courage to find my voice, and I shouted, "Hello there! Who are you?" Slowly the figure wheeled about, and we saw a face of deathly pallor and a pair of eyes that were glowing like live coals fixed upon us. That was enough for us. We made a dash for the fence, and how we ever managed to scramble over it, I am at a loss to know. Had a band of wild Indians been at our heels, we could not have made better time in reaching York. Are we going to watch again? No, thank you. Once is enough for us. So far as we're concerned, the singer can have Prospect Hill Cemetery all to himself any night he wants. If the singer is immortal, he is wasting his time singing in cemeteries, for his voice could bring him a fat salary and a church choir.
It is the opinion of those not governed by superstition that the vocalist is some melancholy or morbid person whose grief for the departed friend leads him to choose a cemetery and the witching time of night for the exercise of his vocal powers. From the St. Louis Republic, St. Louis, Missouri, April 6, 1902.
With my waking thoughts brought thy praise out of my stony griefs, Bethel I will raise. So by my woes to be nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer to thee.
January 25th, 2017. We're walking in Prospect Hill Cemetery in York, Pennsylvania. We're in the old Victorian section. We're trying to find an area
That could have been where the singing corpse was standing.
We are right now kind of centrally located within the old section of the cemetery. So, in theory, we should be seeing somewhere, at least the area that the singing corpse was seen.
We're either within sight of that, or we're within sight of
where they were when they saw it.
Yeah, where Metzl's rustic seat, as he calls it. He said it was under an evergreen, and there's only a few evergreens here that are probably old enough to have been there in the early 1900s, the 19-aughts, when that article was written. The idea was to hopefully find a grave of maybe a singer or a performer, something that would make sense for the singing corpse to be standing on. And maybe he was mourning, maybe it was him, if it was his ghost, or maybe he was there mourning someone else, and that's why he was singing his hymn. We do know there is a performer in here.
It's Lady Delilah.
We're going to go ahead and walk to her stone and look at the date.
I believe it's right over there. The big tomb with the lady reaching her arm heavenward.
Delilah Burnham, her husband, I believe, owned the opera house in New York, and she was a performer. So Delilah Burnham died May 1881.
She was only 48, sorry.
48 years old, and her husband built this monument to her. She was a performer at the York Opera House. I don't know if she was an actress or a singer, but her husband built a beautiful monument to her. And the idea here was to see if perhaps whoever was singing was maybe singing for Delilah.
And actually, this is on a mound.
It is on a mound. It's maybe a little far. It really depends on which pine tree
they were
sitting under, or evergreen tree, I should say. Well, wherever the singing corpse was standing, it'd be interesting to note that it had red glowing eyes. Now, the problem with that is not too many humans have red glowing eyes.
No.
And to me, that's the thing that keeps it in the realm of the supernatural, I guess. The fact that both the employee of the electric light company who first reported the singing corpse and Metzl and Adams report it as having red glowing eyes. That said, how many ghosts have red glowing eyes? I'm just not that versed in ghost research. I'm sure it's come up before, but what does have red glowing eyes?
And there's a strong debate all throughout the internet of what causes the red glowing eyes, why symbolically it might be there, or what the phenomenon would be to cause the appearance, at least, of red glowing eyes.
But we get these reports of red glowing eyes. They tend to come up with these cryptid creatures, with Bigfoot, Mothman, Phantom Hounds, sometimes Dogman. I'm sure I'm leaving out Chupacabras. I'm sure I'm leaving out many others. So
the Goat Man.
Why do they have red glowing eyes? What does that symbolize? Does it indicate that they are purely supernatural entities? Is this, some people say it's demonic. The glowing red eyes represent some kind of demonic power. And if these are cryptid creatures that have the red glowing eyes, we're here in the middle of a city. This cemetery is in the middle of the city, and there just aren't that many reports of these creatures in the city. Which, to me, if they're supernatural, what would it matter to them if they're manifesting in a city or in a rural area?
Exactly. And then there's the question of, if there's more people and more deaths, why would sightings not be more abundant, where more things have happened, more deaths and such?
Yeah, where more souls are interred, because in rural areas you certainly get more cryptid reports around graveyards, or certainly plenty. Very strange, a lot of Bigfoot reports in rural cemeteries and so forth. Now, that's not to say you don't ever get cryptid reports in the cities. You do, they're just very rare. Sometimes you get some dogman reports with the creatures in cities or in big towns, and even rarely Bigfoot reports in parks in towns and cities. But there's just not that many. The reason I bring this up is because on either end of our location here today, I'd say Prospect Hill Cemetery here is probably equidistant between Hex Hollow and Toad Road.
It is the in-between.
And two blocks away from the Cadores Creek, flowing northward from Hex Hollow, past the cemetery here, and up to Toad Road. And you get a lot of similar reports of these mystery lights at both Toad Road and Hex Hollow. The black dogs are in both places. So, if they're natural creatures, if these cryptids are somehow just undiscovered natural creatures, it certainly makes sense that they would be in the rural areas for food
food and places to hide.
Yeah, to hide. If they're supernatural, why wouldn't they appear here as well? And maybe there are reports of mystery lights in the cemetery here. If anybody knows any,
we'd love to hear them.
Yeah, absolutely. Get in contact with us. We're never done researching this story.
It's forever questions. I keep thinking, when I think of the red eyes, there's the... I don't know if it's just me, it's everybody. You think of red eyes with photography. We're not talking about photography here. We're talking about a first-hand account.
Exactly.
Because, you know, the red eye condition with cameras and optics we know how that happens. And in fact, if you don't have red eyes, there's children who only have, say, one red eye that comes up when photographed. That's an indication of a certain cancer.
Oh,
if you
wow.
don't have, if a child has...
It's the camera light reflecting off the rods in the back of the eye, right?
Something. I'm not sure the exact science, but it's reflecting off something. As you see dogs with green eyes or sometimes red eyes, I guess. But yeah, if you don't have red eyes, there's an issue in photography. But we're not talking about photography here.
Right, and even if we were, they didn't have color.
Very true.
At that time.
Very true.
So... But it is worth noting.
Yeah, get that.
And the red eyes, it's absolutely worth noting that when people report them, now there have been photographs of things, you know, red glowing eyes, eye shine and stuff in the woods, but most of the time when people report them, they're reporting seeing red glowing eyes. And a lot of times with very little or no light, so you wonder... it's been put forth that these things just have huge eyes so they can see at night, and that's what's reflecting... like an owl, you know, there's a much proportionately much larger eyes,
and the pupils where the reflection comes from.
Or just even ambient light sources that you wouldn't think would be enough to reflect off of the eyes, like deer when they get hit by headlights. That's obviously,
yeah,
you know, it's reflecting. But some people suggest that these huge pupils to allow for night vision reflect light, and that's what people are seeing. But sometimes people are reporting this in the middle of the woods, you know, where there's, I mean, how much ambient light can there be,
yeah,
in the middle of the woods when you know, under tree cover and in the shadows, and these things have, the eyes in many of these cases seem to be self-luminous. So what does that mean? What is that about?
I think it was very important to note, and the photography thing, because people think that right away, but you have to go down to the fact that it is, as you just said, it could be self-luminous, and that is the interesting part. That is the unnatural part.
Absolutely. As I would think, I'm not an expert on optics, but I would think that self-luminous eyes would be prohibitive as far as night vision. They would negatively affect your night vision. But I certainly could be wrong there. We just came upon a grave of Metzel, which is not a super common name, even around here. I'm looking to see if we have a Harry. This looks to be a family plot. Just a little bit of synchronicity. We just, of all the tombs we walked upon, we came up upon the Metzel family plot.
It's completely unexpected.
I don't see a Harry Metzel here, but that doesn't mean that he's not here. As I said, there's a lot of unmarked burials in here. Sometimes the family just didn't have enough money to carve another name in the tombstones. So, as we were talking about ghosts, and I think it would be safe to say that there are no experts when it comes to ghosts either. No one knows for sure what we're talking about, whether we're truly dealing with energies of the dead. But there are certainly people that research it more than others, and maybe people that are tuned in more than others. And you had a very interesting experience the other day at an antique store, kind of locally, the next county over.
It's in New Oxford, in Adams County, I believe.
Yeah, which is right near to a place where we've had some Mothman-type sightings, just of interest. They call it Old Red Eye over there, speaking of red glowing eyes. But you were in an antique store where, in fact, you've had a sort of ghostly experience before.
Yes. And I'll preface this by saying, as I say all the time, I consider myself a healthy blend of skeptic and believer. I don't know exactly where I stand, on the matter, but I was there about 2 years ago in the basement of this antique store, and it was nothing like you would think a sighting or anything like that would be of anything paranormal. I was just looking around with my family. My mother was there, and she was looking in a case, and I was kind of looking with her. I was a little behind her, and there was a gentleman behind me, and I asked my mom to move up so the gentleman could pass, and when I looked again, he was not, there was nobody there, but I had a faint, I knew what he looked like. It's really hard to explain. I knew what he looked like. It was an older gentleman, white hair and a short beard. I very distinctly remember what he looked like, but he wasn't there. Upon doing asking some questions, I found that at that particular antique store, they have had, or in that building, they have had many sightings. In fact, on their website, they have many things detailed, videos and such, at least last time I saw it. So I was there again. This was 2 years later.
I think it's probably okay to say the name if they're putting ghost stuff on.
Yes, it was Golden Lane Antiques in New Oxford. And I was there again. And as we were paying for something that we bought, or that we picked up, obviously, I was talking to the lady at the counter. Somehow it came up. I was looking at these books that were by the counter, and she pointed out that they were written by the owner. They were all books on paranormal things. So she was talking, and somehow my experience came up. And out of the office, the owner came walking out, and he stood right before me. He was a pleasant man. I told him the experience, and the first thing he said was, "Yes, you have someone following you right now." I was startled, to say the least, but almost not surprised. So I talked to him a little bit, and then the next thing he said is, "I get a lot of energy from you." So that was a pretty crazy experience.
So that video you got at Golden Lane, was that the same day?
No, that was actually, I had a video of, it was in the basement of Golden Lane, and
it, do you still have it?
I believe it's on Instagram, but I don't have it saved on my phone anymore. Yes, when the experience happened, the whole basement was opened, and in the back they had a room where they did it was like a headquarters for a ghost hunting thing, and they did seances, they say, yeah. It was a back room at the basement. They had kind of not roped off, but it was kind of a private thing. But it was back there; you could see it. Since then, they've closed that area. But when I was there, this was maybe a year and a half after the experience. I just decided the video, the area is black. It was just darkness because they didn't have the lights turned on and it was kind of roped off. I videoed the area that they used to have that the seance things in and stuff, because it honestly has a strange feeling to it. It's and like I said, I try to be a healthy blend of skeptic and believer, but I can't deny that it has a strange feeling when you're down there. So I videoed it, and we left. My family and I left, and we went to another antique store. And I was watching the video with my son at the next antique store we were at, and then I showed it to the rest of my family because there appeared to be something that went across the screen. It wasn't an orb. It wasn't, I don't know what it was. It just looked like a movement.
Yeah, it's, I want to say a shadow, but it's not a shadow of someone passing by. It's not like that.
It just, I don't know how to explain it. It looks like an energy kind of moving across. And it was faint, but it was distinct enough to be able to say, "Hey, what is that? Can that be something?"
If we can, we'll link it or even put it in the video if we can figure it out, the tech end of that.
Yeah, and definitely check out the Golden Lane Antiques website, and if you have a chance to visit, maybe you can feel the strangeness that I'm referring to.
Maybe we'll go out there one day and see if they'll let us do it an on-site.
I hope so, because actually the owner said, and I told you this, but to share it with our listeners, on my way out, the owner said, "Come back and play with our friends anytime." And I have to say, it didn't sound crazy. So we'll take him up on that, maybe.
And we're going to continue looking for Bethels here. I just want to note that we've been through Prospect Hill several times since writing the book, several times before, several times in the course of writing the book. And not once have I stumbled upon any Metzels. Today we've come upon two separate Metzel family plots.
Yes, you and I talk about synchronicities a lot, and it's always interesting when it happens. And we were just walking along and talking about Metzel, and here we stumble upon Metzel plots.
I have to say, Metzel is not a super common name, to the point where I wondered if it was a misprint, if his name was a misprint in the original article. I wondered if it was Wetzel, which we have a ton of Wetzels around here. But I'm certain it was Metzel now. And we don't know if Harry's grave is even in here, but it's just interesting to find some Metzel family plots just randomly as we're walking. That was quite the synchronicity. So it'll probably be a lot of editing because we've just let the recorder run the entire time we've been out here. The hope was we'd maybe capture some EVP recordings or just as we walk, if things have come up that we've talked about, we're obviously not going to play the whole thing and have the listener hear us walking around 170 acres of graves.
We're fortunate to stumble across some interesting things with the Metzl tombs.
I'd say we do a whole show on synchronicity, but in a way, I think the entire podcast is always about synchronicity.
In a way, yeah, I can agree with that.
I think when you get into this kind of research, at least as I've gotten into it, synchronicities just pop up left and right to the point where they get almost silly just to keep noting them. That said, I do. It happens again and again.
And it's always astonishing. It's always a great feeling when you just so happen to.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the. I tend to say there's no such thing as coincidence, and that's an exaggeration. Obviously, there are coincidences. A synchronicity would be, I guess, a coincidence with meaning. To sort of simplify it. But perhaps that's when you get that astonished feeling, that surprise. Maybe that's one of the indications of synchronicity versus coincidence.
Oh, if unjoyful wing cleaving the sky, sun, moon and stars forgot, upward I will fly. Still, a song shall be near, am my God to thee, near, my God to thee, nearer to thee.
So we have an interesting note to add to our little trip to Prospect Hill Cemetery. That is about anomalous lights. While we were there, Anthony was taking several pictures. We started and ended at the tomb of Delilah Burnham that we were talking about. And as we went there at the end of the day, he took several photographs, and in each one is some sort of light anomaly.
Yes, not certain or not saying exactly what, but it is definitely something there that was not there. I took photos when we went the first time, and then when we came back around.
And we're not going to say it's an orb. We're not going to say it's a UFO. We're not going to claim it's anything, but it is a light anomaly. Even if it's just a lens flare, it's very interesting because we were talking as we were walking that we don't get reports of these light anomalies in Prospect Hill Cemetery, and that showed up on the picture.
Yeah, we were trying to roll out, you know, a lens flare or whatnot, trying to figure out what it could be. It's weird because I don't know my stance on orbs. I've seen plenty, and I've seen people talk about them, what they could be. I've never been very convinced, but as I was looking through the photos when I got home after we visited the cemetery, it was very noticeable. They were the last photos I took, and there it was.
So it's either something, an orb, or some sort of something, some sort of mystery light. Or it's just another synchronicity to add to the day.
Yeah, which we were talking about quite a bit as we were walking. The interesting part to me is the blur. That is the most interesting part to me. Out of several photos, two of them were not in focus. And the anomaly was out of focus with all the physical objects.
Yeah, I zoomed in on it, and it looks like it has a shadow to it, at least in the right area. The sun is on one side of the picture. And there appears to be a shadow on the corresponding side of this, whatever it is. So it seems like it has dimensionality. I don't know. Maybe it's a dust fleck.
Yes, we're trying to rule it out. We're not saying it's anything, but it was very interesting. Another interesting fact that Tim's wife pointed out was that there's a ray of sun that stays in the same position on all the photographs. The spot itself moves around. It moves, in some photos, it's closer to the monument. Other times, it's further away.
Just wanted to add that little bit there at the end. So maybe we do have some light anomalies to report in Prospect Hill after all.
So we've been to two places where the Seven Gates were originally supposed to be. The first was Hex Hollow.
The Legend of the Seven Gates. There's the Legend of the Devil's Circle we talked about, which worked an awful lot like the Seven Gates. You'd walk around the stones. No one has said how many times, but I always say I'd wager money it's probably seven times. Yep. And it worked just like the Seven Gates. You just walked around the Devil's Circle. And these horrible things that happen as you walked around. And then Matt told us in his story about five bridges. That was a new one to me, where he said there were five bridges you would drive over and your car would stall after the fifth bridge.
Yeah, I had not heard that one in my entire life, and I'm born and raised.
But yeah. That's just another example. Again, it sounds like the Seven Gates, where the series of things you have to do. Yep. And then something bad happens. And we talked about or heard tales of black dogs and will-o'-the-wisps, glowing fields and ghosts in Hex Hollow.
Yeah, and then we traveled to Prospect Hill Cemetery,
where we heard about the singing corpse. And next time, we're going to head to the main subject. We're going to go back to where we started. We're going to go back to Toad Road, still following the Cadores Creek north. And there we're going to hear even more strangeness. Ghosts, cryptids, mystery lights, black dogs. It's all at Toad Road.
And there are also some legit horrible human activities that occurred down there. Some assaults and murders.
We'll tell you all about it next episode. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts, LLC. Music, art, podcasts, books, and more. DarkHollerArts.com.
Intro and background music by Stone Breath, which is our band. You can find more at stonebreath.bandcamp.com.
Additional voices in this episode were Sarada and Michael Anderson. The singer for Near My God to Thee, which you hear throughout this episode, was Martin Bates of Eyeless in Gaza. He sang that for Stone Breath, and it appears on our album Cryptids.
Among the graves.
sun gone down, darkness beyond me. Rest the stone, yet in my dream I'll be nearer, my God, to thee, nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee. There let the way appear, steps unto heaven, and all thou sendest me in mercy given. Angels to beckon me nearer, my God, to nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee. Then, with my waking thoughts, bright with thy praise, out of my stony grief, Bethel I will raise. So by my woes to be nearer, my God, to thee, nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee. Oh, if unjoyful wing cleaving the sky, sun, moon, and stars forgot, upward I will fly. Still, oh, my song shall be nearer, my God, to thee, nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee.